Hey, Print Hustlers, welcome back to another episode of Printavo's Print Hustlers podcast. I'm your host, Bruce from Printavo. We've got our host, Hurricane Farrig, out of Campus Inc. down in Champaign, Illinois. We've got a very special guest, but before I introduce him, if you guys haven't checked out Printavo, it helps you organize and grow your shop. We are helping shops just supercharge their business and really be able to streamline everything from start to finish. Okay, without further ado, though, we've got a very special guest here today out of San Leandro, California, Brig Printings, Dawood Muhammad.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing? Thanks for having me on. I got a round of applause.
I'm starting to work on these sound effects here. We got Dawood Muhammad. No, Dawood, how's the shop been?
The shop's been, you know, it's been crazy. You know what I mean? It's been good. You know what I mean? It's been a crazy year so far. And so, man, it's been a journey. You know what I mean? It's the same old, but at the same time, it's just a lot more of it.
Yeah. We originally met, you were talking about SGIA.
Right. Out there in Vegas. Yeah. It was pretty cool, man. I missed the trade shows. Hopefully they have ISS. I don't know if they are, if they're not, but yeah, it was pretty dope. You know, I met you guys up there. Y'all had y'all nice little kiosks. It was like a little kiosk, like little table type situation. It was like maybe three of you guys.
Yep.
And I wanted to check out the software and everything. And at that time, we was using mainly for our business software was a Fast Manager. It's kind of antiquated and everything. So we want to get on the cloud. You know what I mean? I ain't going to talk bad about it because, to be honest, it got us where we are today. It was a really great platform at the time. But we needed to be able to disconnect from, you know what I mean, the network. You know what I mean? We need to be able to disconnect. So we was up there, saw you guys up there. You guys were young, energetic, you know what I mean? Hungry. And so I'm like, man, let's see what these guys talking about. And booyah, that's where we met. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I was telling Steven, I don't remember that, unfortunately. I remember hanging out at ThreadX last year, but our highlight of SGIA was Steven booking two one-way flights to Vegas.
Two one-way flights.
And I think I realized it when I went to check in for my flight on Sunday at like 10 a.m. And that's the story of Bruce and Steven going to trade shows, booking the wrong flights to the wrong states, to the wrong
hotel dates, years.
Wrong hotels. We've done it all. But Dawood, tell us a little bit. I mean, 3 years ago, where you're at now, where was your shop then? Where's it at now?
3 years ago, you know, when you've been in this game as long as I have, been doing custom screen printing since 99. And so 3 years ago feels like 3 months ago. You know what I mean? That's why I remember it so vividly. But at that time, I was probably, we was at the same location. I think we had, SGIA is before ISS. So we may have two automatics at the time, two A-color M&Rs. We had 8 heads of embroidery, 2 Tajima machines. And we probably had like 15 people on staff or something like that. And our clientele base was still the same clientele base, you know? And because right after that, I think that's when we purchased the 12-color Rock, because we went to the ISS that January. And hooked up with them dudes over there at Rock and got a machine. If I did, I think we may have had the machine at the time. I don't know.
You're running blue and green?
Blue and green, baby.
That's awesome. Next thing,
blue and green.
It'll be what does the digital squeegee go on? It'll have to go on, it might have to go on a Rock, right?
I know,
right?
I seen that video. I seen that, I think maybe Bruce posted it. I said, oh man, I didn't know that was a possibility. I said, okay. That looked kind of cool. But yeah, I like the way the digital squeegee looks. You know what I mean? It looks like it's doing pretty good, you know. But, you know, maybe that'll happen in the future or something like that. We just purchased a brother. DTG just came in 2 days ago. So,
What was that for? For retail stuff or?
No, it's like another tool to have in the arsenal, you know what I mean? So whatever coming through the door, it may be a great job for DTG or screen print or embroidery or both, you know. And if you got, say, pieces, that's 12 pieces and you got all these colors in it, man, we're going to put that DTG. And, you know, if you got more, then we'll see if we can set that up for screen printing. But we got the bulk, the brother bulk, supposed to be the big one, you know what I'm saying? So you're supposed to be able to do the cost for the ink is supposed to be a lot cheaper. So we're really? Going to see really? How, yeah, we're going to see how it works, you know. We're
gonna see so how that's it. The newest one that just came out?
It just came out, yeah, maybe a couple of months ago, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, so you get the buy the ink in bulk, so the ink comes in these big old jugs, and the machine is a lot bigger. It's more industrial for a brother. It's not up there like a Maverick or something like that, but it's definitely not the same as the GT3 that we had previously.
What do those run, if we might ask?
It was like 30.
Oh, that's not...
Yeah, okay. Like 35.
We're not talking like Cornette prices or anything. Okay.
Right. It's doable, you know what I mean? And we're going to see it still in the crate. I ain't opened the box yet. So we still waiting on the stand to come. So once the stand comes, we bust him open and put him on the stand and, you know, get it situated so the guys can come and tell us how to use it. But we may not wait for him. We may just plug it in and start playing around with it.
Wow.
You still use yours quite a bit, Farrick, right?
Yeah, we have the Epson, the F2100, 21,000, and it's solid. It does its job. It's DTG. I mean, you have to put a disclaimer on it a little bit. It's not a replacement, you know, but it fixes those 12 to 20 piece orders with, you know, bad artwork, and someone just wants like something simple or a, you know, on there, and they're not too concerned about it all day.
Is that what it's, do you use it a lot more for filling in the holes there with a mistake or you forgot the shirt or whatever happened? Or is it just for smaller run jobs? Like, you know, like an order comes out and they're missing, you know, one shirt or something at the end of it, or you goofed it or whatever happened.
Well, you can't really do that with DTG and screen print. It's just like, unless they really had to have it and they're like, man, my daddy's going to have a fit if I don't have his shirt or whatever. Then you say, okay, well, what I can do is this. It's going to look a little bit different. The colors may not be as vibrant and it may have a different feel. If you're good with it, then cool. But if you're trying to pass it off as one of the production runs, it's not going to work.
Yeah, it'll stick out like a sore thumb. I thought that too. Like, hey, we'll just throw it on the DTG, and after a while, it's like, there's no way. There's just, it's like a totally different ball game.
Yeah, I mean, but, you really don't want to do that because they may like the DTG better, and you'd be like, damn, you know.
Yeah.
I like this feel so soft and smooth. Oh, why they all don't feel like this? This is what I thought I was getting. But yeah, DTG, I look at them all as tools, you know, like we as garment decorators, we have a set of tools that we get to use, whether it's screen print or embroidery or vinyl, some cases, you know, and yeah, just another tool, a manual, you know, just everything has its place and they all are great at what they do. You know, automatic is great for big production, fast turnaround, consistency, you know what I mean? The manual is good for if you got a smaller shop, you don't have the ability to really, you know, have a commercial facility or, you know, you got some guys who can really pull the squeegee and you can bang like 40, 50, 60, 100, 200 pieces out depending on the graphic itself. Could be a left chest, you know, something real easy to pull. You know, we haven't really did manual printing in a long time since I bought the automatic. Every job we put is on the auto.
Yeah. Dawood, I would assume you run a CTS, direct to screen?
Not yet, no.
You guys are still on film, right?
Still on film, man. We on that plastic, you know? We still on that plastic. But every shop owner I talk to as of yet that have purchased a direct to screen is like, that's the first thing you need to get. You need to get a direct to screen. I'm like, damn, really? Is it that big of a difference, really? And so me and Kevin been talking about it, and we may pull the trigger on it. You know, we just waiting for a good deal. We like to buy stuff at a good deal. And right now, it's a lot of deals out there, to be honest. I actually passed up on one. It was a dial fit machine. This guy's going closing the shop up, and he had a dial fit. I looked at it. I'm like, man, that thing looks kind of old, and, you know, I was kind of scared. Then I talked to Tom from Motion, or Tom Davenport. Mm-hmm. And he was like, man, you need to get it. And so I hooked you up with the people, blah, blah, blah. And so I still haven't pulled the trigger on it, though.
Yeah.
Well, you got it before and after.
We pulled the trigger on a Douthit in last January, actually. And it was a conversation that Mark from Douthit had been talking to me for like 3 years. Every trade show he would come and
every Long Beach.
Every single trade show, come and say hi. And finally I made the call and he was there the next week. And it's an awesome machine. That's super cool.
But game changer,
Game changer, because I realized, and I was just texting Dylan from upstate. I think it's, if we really measured the downtime of our presses, I think we would freak out. Like, how many hours a day do your presses really run versus what you think they run? And right. I think it comes down to setups. It all just comes down to setups. And, you know, if you have great press operators and someone that's really good in the dark room, you know, you're going to be quick. But if it's a tough setup, man, that CTS straight to Trilock or whatever, you know, PRU system you're using is money. It's absolutely a game changer for us.
Got it. And we don't even use the Trilock system or anything.
Everything by eye, right?
Everything.
So you have some pretty talented people then on press, I would assume.
Yeah. Like I like to say, like, man, are you a screen printer? Are you a press operator? We try to work with screen printers. It's a difference, you know. A press operator can push buttons, stop, go, load the shirt, unload the shirt. Screen printer can do basically everything. And what I'm finding out is best to set it up to where that you don't have to do to rely on so much skill set as much as the automation of it. And so I was like, you know, pumping my chest, like, man, we screen printers over here. If you need the Trilock, man, that's training wheels. Take the training wheels off. I mean, you know, can you set up in 5 minutes without Trilock? Can you do this without that? And so it's cool as you know, when you're smaller, but as you grow and you need to hire more people and you want to be able to take somebody off the street and say, here, boom, put you in. And that's what we're leaning towards, trying to get maybe on that status. So we may have to incorporate one of those direct to screen, either iImage or the Dowfit. I don't know. I just went to this one guy's shop the other day. He was showing me the iImage. He's like, man, you need to get this, bro. I'm like, for real? He's like, yes. Trust me, you need to get it. Everybody I talk to, that's what they say. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. And I'm like, man, we should get the iImage. Should we get it? Damn. Then next thing you know, forget it.
No, so I was going to say, like, you've got 150,000 followers on your Instagram.
Yeah, 152.
152. you guys do a ton of, like, flock, 3D. I mean, just the decoration methods that you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's some of the stuff that, as I'm looking at it, looks really intimidating to do. Is that from just your experience? How did you guys get so good at whether it's flock or tackle twill or all the stuff that?
So my background into this game is start with my own clothing line, right? And so when I started my own clothing line, I wanted my brand to look like the brands I've seen in the mall and the stores and what my customers were wearing. You know what I mean? And so even at that time, it was a whole bunch of embroidery, a whole bunch of screen printing, a whole bunch of special effects. And this was in 94, you know? And so I used to go to the mall back in the day and just go to different stores like a Miller's Outpost. You probably don't even know what that is. But Miller's Outpost and PacSun and things like that, and look at all the different shirts that were being printed. And man, they always had some top of line. Like, that's the first time I seen high density was inside a PacSun store, you know, it may be a Roxy shirt or something like that, the skater or the surfer brands. And so as soon as I got into this business, I wanted myself to be like that. I want whatever I can think about. I want to be able to put that on the garment. And I had the privilege of not being a screen printer and getting into the game was actually coming from a design aspect and selling a garment. If I had to get into the game as a screen printer, I probably would have watered my designs down to match my skill set. But being that I hooked up with a great screen printer, anything I threw at him, he never complained. He never said anything. So I just thought that's how the game was until I went to a different screen printer and saw that it wasn't. So, and our clientele base, they come at me the same way that I was back in the day. Like, hey, man, I want it to be like this. Can you do that? Can you, like, yeah, we can do it. Let me see what we can do. And that's how it is. So when we got our embroidery machine, this was in like 04, we got a two-head Tajima. And the first thing we did, like, as soon as I got the machine, like, oh, I'm going to do screen printing and embroidery. and applique all on the same garment. And that was the first project we did. And so, man, it came out really dope. I hooked up with my buddy Steve at Fab Tex. He's out there in Arizona. He used to always be at ISS show. And what he did at the time, he mainly just cut material. He cut poly twill, cotton twill, all these different cool designs. He used to have this little DVD. And on his DVD or CD, it was basically like an instruction booklet on different embroidery methods, different type of stitches, this everything, because he had to educate the consumer on all the things that he can do, because you just don't know what your capabilities are. And so when I got it and we drove home from ISS, ISS is Long Beach, we drive all the way to the Bay. That's a 6-7 hour ride. And the whole ride, I'm studying this guy, and I was like, whoa. And so as soon as we got home, I said, Steve, that's what I got. Send it to him. We hooked it up. We actually entered it in the Impressions magazine. They had the contest they had every year. It was Impressions and EMB magazine. And we came in first place in 3 categories. It was dope. Yeah, they had us on display at ISS show. And it was pretty cool. So when we came into this game, that's all that we really was really trying to do. We didn't want to do left chest like this right here. We wasn't trying to just do a little left chest stuff. We wanted to do full, big, bold. You know, we big printing, so, you know, we got to do it big and bold. You know what I mean? That's our clientele base. So that's what really got us into doing that type of stuff. It's like that's what we do all day, every day. It's regular.
Wow. And Dawood, do you guys do any contract printing, or are you guys pretty much your own?
We pretty much do our own thing. We got our own clients. We used to do the broker contract stuff, and we found out for us, our value wasn't in printing cheap. It wasn't in printing fast. Our value was in the way that we print in the creative side of things, and that really wasn't valued on a contract or broker basis. Everything is price-driven. And we can't compete with being the cheapest. That's just not our thing. That's not the model that we really want to go after. So we did it for a while. It felt good at the time because you would get some big orders coming through. And, you know, you have some big names attached to these orders, and they make you feel like you're doing a lot. But right prior to going into that market, we were doing schools. And schools, the markup was totally different. You can really make you some money. And you can still be creative because the school will want you to put your flair, your flavor, and your expertise on there, because you're selling the kids. They want something fly. You know what I mean? So when we did that and we branched off to the ASI, PPAI, all of that type of stuff, it was cool for a minute, but then we started looking at those invoices. Like, we did all of this for how much? Let me see. How much was that? Man, we could have sold 100 sweatshirts and made that. We just did 3,000 shirts to do that. And we got to wait for the money, and you know, they sell you the goods, or they send you the goods. You don't make a markup on that. So it wasn't conducive for us. So we stopped it, and then we went strictly like we're going to work with brands.
How'd you stop it? Like, did you just raise the prices on them, or you just said, we're not taking this order?
We weren't that big. So we had one or two ASI people, right? That's what we call them, ASI people. And so we had two kind brokers, and they would stock you up. They got all these different sales reps selling. And then once we just cut it off with one, that's pretty much it. You know, that's pretty much it. And
it's
so
a pretty hard thing to do.
It is. It's your business is set up that way. But to be honest, it's once you make your mind up that you ain't doing it no more, it's just like anything else. So we wasn't addicted to it because it sounded good and it felt good because you got all these big orders coming in. Well, some are big, some are not. And it feels like you're doing a lot until you start really looking at the numbers. And if you don't have nothing compared to, then it may feel like that you're doing good. But if you never did any other market to know that, you know what, for the amount of money that I'm making, I could have did half the work and made just as much. So if I did the same amount of work, I'd have made double, or I could have been at home earlier, or I could have been chilling on the weekend with my family or whatever, you know, and I could have been doing something that's, I could have been doing something that's, is more rewarding. Like, it feels rewarding to do something for a big name or whatever, but at the end of the day, I want to cash a big check. If I can't do that, then it's like you doing it for fun, you know? And I know some guys out there, some big, big operations out there, that's mainly what they do, you know what I mean? And when times like this happen, far as the country shuts down, woo, they start to close shop, you know, because the margins were so thin, and you, and when they stopped, you just kind of short. And
for us, it was good.
That wasn't this year, right? That was before.
No, that was years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was years ago. That was in like maybe 08, 07, 08. We learned pretty quick. It was fun. It's like, oh, cool. We're doing this for Yahoo. We're doing this for Delta Airlines. Doing this. And like, oh, yeah, that's great. That's great. We don't suddenly see the invoice. It's like, it was all right. You know, you take the big, like if you take the big name off of it, it's really like whack, to be honest. It's whack. It's like whack, unless the numbers is really there. So at the one time we did one order for the Beta Breakers, that's a big marathon out here. It's like 30-something thousand shirts. And we was like, whoa, we did it. That's a big order. You know, and it was front and back, and it was good. Actually, it was cool. It was cool because the numbers was there. It was there. But then it was other times, it's like, it wasn't there.
Sure.
It wasn't there.
That's
so.
Like the whole profit first thing at the foundation, really, where he talks about it's not top line numbers. I mean, the top it's line the is just line. To satisfy your ego, to make us feel good. But it's really at the end of the day, what do you have coming out of it?
Right. Once that newness and all that wears off, you start looking at those numbers like, man, that was kind of whack. We doing this, and we got to wait, and got to get a PO. We got to put forth all this money up front, pay my employees, do all of this and that. And then, you know, it's so it wasn't cool.
Left. So, Dawood, you have, like I said, if you haven't followed Big Printing on Instagram, it's awesome. Yeah, I'm like lost. I'm like scrolling through it, and I'm like, I gotta listen. I'm just scrolling through, looking right now, and I'm just like, I mean, it's awesome because it's so different and so unique. Are a lot of your sales, you know, driven from Instagram? Like, how do you all market? Because it seems like you guys attack a certain niche.
Yeah, IG is real heavy for us. And it's a beautiful thing, you know, because it's been so long. It was a time where, you know, if you're a screen printer, you definitely were considered local unless you were one of these really big, big, big companies. But with social media and Instagram for us, man, it really opened up the whole country to us. You know what I mean? And when they allow for you to do your own promotional ads where you can promote and they will promote for you, pay them a couple of dollars and they'll promote for you and they'll put you in different markets that you wouldn't even think of, it's really a game changer. And I saw that and I said, whoa, Instagram is good because what we do is all visual. You know what I mean? We do graphics, we print, we decorate garments. And so we can take some nice pictures and put it out there. I know if the right person see it, they gonna really be hooked on it because I know I'm hooked on it. And so I know if I'm hooked on it, then it's a nation of people just as like me that's gonna be feeling it. And sure enough, that's what's happening.
So are you just in the DMs a lot, or people reach out to you, or is it ads through Instagram or what?
It's the DMs, it's the comments, it's the phone calls, it's the emails, it's the whole ecosystem of getting in contact with somebody via social media.
On Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, Farrick, you are, I mean, talking to your guys at the office, they're just heavy in Instagram too.
Yeah, I think that's the only place where no matter who you are, whether you're an influencer, a marketing team, like there's a body behind that phone. And there's someone like messaging, and that's how we connect too. Not at the scale that y'all are doing it. Do you have a team? Like, do you have a team that's managing that full time? Like, is it just you or?
Yeah, just me, basically. Yeah, in the IG. So, you know, we set up our website. We got that hooked up, and once we got that hooked up, it's really, really skyrocketed. So, it's been great because we've been building up our following for a while, and for the most part, it was mainly the DM. So in the DM, they hit us up and then I just reply with a link, click the link, fill out the form, and then it populates on our back end. And then we input it inside our inside a Fast Manager at the time, send it over to them and they review it. Then we have to send them a PayPal link. Then they make the payment and then it converts over to an order. Well, we hooked up with your guys' arch rivals and got set up with them. And to be honest, it's like, phew, skyrocket. And we've been working on it for a long time. We just never really plugged it in. In the beginning of January, we decided to really say, you know what, we're finna dive in full speed ahead. And we did it. And it happened at the great time because when the so-called country shut down, everybody went online, and it was a perfect time for us to be online, because it just really, really, it, all the work that we've been doing on Instagram as far as building our audience and whatnot, it gave them a way to make a purchase, and it was dope. It was dope, and it's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and so we just been scaling.
Is that these packages? Because on your website, you sell a lot of these, like 24 beanies, $199. You know, hoodies, $1,000 for 53 color front. Is that where people will go, click on that, purchase, and then start their whole process?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we try to just simplify the process. I know when I was starting in this business, it was kind of complicated when you go sit down with a screen printer and say, oh, yeah, I want to get the design. I say, well, how many colors? And okay, you know, you got to have a screen charge. You have a flash charge. You got all these different charges. So we just try to bake everything into one package deal. So, okay, cool. You know, $400 will get you 50 t-shirts with a 3-color print. You get your inside neck labels printed, and your shirts come individually folded and bagged and poly bags. And they're like, okay, cool. All I need is $400. I get 50 shirts. I sell them for $20 each. I can turn my $400 to $1,000.
Got it. So you're selling to a lot of brands, it sounds like. Clothing brands and...
Clothing brands and people who maybe didn't... There's a lot of them are first timers. You know what I mean? It's their first time actually getting into the business. They say, okay, $399, start your own brand. All right, cool. I know I got $399 and I got an idea. And then sure. That's where it starts.
It makes
at.
It simple. There's
really
no
simplified.
Quoting and back and forth.
Right. Right. The streamlined is really simple. If you got more than 3 colors, then it's 4 to 5 colors, additional $100. Right. You got 6 to 7 colors, additional $200. You want something on the back, it's additional $100. Each additional location, just make it really simple, you know? And so sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, but sometimes we come in the middle. So it depends on how many colors they're getting.
Well, how would you lose?
Well, we won't lose. We'll lose a little. So our profit margin would be a lot bigger. Not a lot, but a little bit more bigger if it was just a 1-color print, right? Versus being a 3-color print.
Okay. Right? But I think the smart thing that you do is by saying, hey, if you want this, it's going to be another $100. It plays defense for you as well, because it's like, it's pay to play. If you want it, we'll do it, but this is what it's going to be, and it's one way or the other. It's not, it's going to be a dollar here and a setup charge there. Nope, it's $100, and that's what it is. And then in their heads, they're like, can I afford that? Yes or no? And that's it. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, either $100 sounds difficult or it sounds easy. Wherever your pockets is like, then it's like, okay, $100. All right, let me get it. Or $100, right. Nah, that's okay. Or if you want a premium shirt, it's an upgrade of $100.
Especially, I mean, it does reduce so much thinking on the customer's end, right? So it's like, okay, do I hit the price break or am I right under? How many do I actually need? You know, especially for your customer base, it's so much, it increases that like convenience factor and speed factor of the back and forth.
Yeah, and it's easy for me to just give you a quote. Let me see it. Oh, that's 5 colors. You look for 50 shirts, you're starting off at $499.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Did your customer base change at all with COVID, or because it was brands, it sounds like brands are just going crazy right now.
Yeah, it just went crazy. So clientele base stayed the same. It stayed the same because that's who we really concentrate on. That's who our demographic is. Mm-hmm. And so it's just more of it. Some got off of the fence that may have been following and looking for a long time and said, you know what? Now it's the time for me to start my brand. And I've been following you guys for a while. So I want you guys to do it. You know, and so for the most part, our clientele base is the same. It's just more of it, because what IG and Instagram allows for us to tap in with people from all over the country, and we're working with brands. They appreciate the fact that you can do denim on a shirt, or you can do a Chanel, or you can do a 3D patch, or you can do something real crazy, something different. They're looking for different. That's what they're looking for. You know what I mean? It's versus trying to sell this high price item to someone who said, yeah, I like that, but how cheap can I get that? It's best when you marketing and building your company. It's great that you can have the people coming to you. Then you can really kind of like, you can set the tone of what the experience is going to be like versus you going to them. And then you have to deal with the experience going to be like from their perspective. You know, and so that's why we spend a lot on Instagram. Well, not even a lot in comparison. It's not really a lot, but we do a lot of promotion on Instagram, and that seemed to be the platform that our clientele base is on heavy. And right now, I think it's a really, really unique moment in time that you do have your demographic on one platform versus being broken up into all these different places. That may not be the case 5 years from now, 2 years from now. It may be the thing not to be on the same platform, but right now, today, it is. So it's a great opportunity. That's why I tell a lot of my customers, like, hey, man, definitely want to market, go on IG, give them some money. They're not going to let you use their platform without you paying them. It may seem like you can, some people do, but at the end of the day, they know the algorithm. They know your clientele better than you do. It's owned by Facebook. Facebook knows your name. They know your cousin's name. They know your all your family. They know what you like. They know what you don't like. They know what you scroll on. They know everything. And so when I first started advertising on IG, I would try to figure it out, make my own demographic, like, and pick the character or the categories that I wanted. And I didn't get any results. And then I just set it on automatic. And I was like, whoa. Oh, okay, it's working. Oh, it should work. It's their platform. They want me to keep spending money. They will bring me some results. So that's what happened. So I'm like, whoa. And then we'll do a trade show like Magic in Las Vegas. And then a lot of people come to the booth like, hey, man, I've been following y'all on IG. I'm from Kentucky and I'm from all these different places that I never would have thought of. They're like, man, your stuff come up on my thing every day. I don't know who's in charge of the of your social media, but it comes on my page every day. I'm like, oh man, that's dope. So it's definitely a game changer. At least for us, it's definitely a game changer.
Do you shoot out a lot of like cold messages to people too, or is it very heavy ad driven?
Not really, no.
Okay, so it's people like reaching out from the ads. Got it.
Yeah, people reaching out. Yeah, so we just, I see what posts is kind of resonating with people, and then I put a couple of dollars on it and see what happens. It'd be the one that I think is kind of not really the one, and it go up. Like, I got one that's probably like almost 1 million views, right? It's just me taking out my phone, videoing what was on the press at the time. It was really raw and uncut, but it resonated with people and started going up. I'm like, oh man, this one doing numbers. So I put a couple of dollars on it, and then it just keep doing numbers. So I keep running that same ad.
If a shop, yeah, it does feel like it. If a shop has never like paid for Instagram ads, what is a simple way to just do it? You said you find a post that you think is resonating well. Do you put $100 for a day, $10? Like, how much?
$20.
Okay, so it's just small bits of like $20.
$20, yeah. And may across a few different ads, but the way I see which one is resonating when I post it, and it's getting a lot of likes and comments. Okay, well, people are kind of feeling that. And nowadays, it's kind of difficult because Instagram, whatever the algorithm is, they won't send it out to everybody. And so it's kind of hard to tell, because if your reach is only a quarter or percentage of whatever your actual following is, then that means they're not even sending it out. It's not even getting to the people at all. It's not even like they can see it to like it or to comment. You know what I mean? So certain posts, they allow, or however it works, I don't know how it works, but some breaks through, some don't. And the ones that break through and they resonate with people, and you see a lot of likes and a lot of interaction and comment, then put some money on it and let Instagram go and feed it. You know what I mean? And then they got other ways so you can step your game up, so to speak, far as like building different audiences and doing lookalike audiences and using they got the Facebook pixel. You can put that on your site. You can really get the analytics that way. I went to a conference that Facebook had out here in Oakland, and that's what they were talking about. I was supposed to implement all of that stuff. I never did it. And it sounded like it was a good idea.
feels like a lot of seminars and stuff too.
But you know what, Dawood? You are the second person we've talked to in less than a week that has been talking about paid ads.
Social, specifically.
Paid social ads. And I think, you know, like, since COVID pandemic, we've all kind of like adjusted or zeroed the way we're doing things. Are you more focused, like, every day do you go in with like, I'm going to try to make one post pop off today, or my goal is to get a couple leads out of it? Like, you know,
to be honest, the ads is off the hook and the DMs is so crazy right now. I don't do that. Before, I just post stuff and see what happens. Before Instagram would allow for paid ads, you have to go and manually, or just go and comment on people's stuff and I'll say like, hey, oh yeah, that's a nice picture. Oh yeah, start your own clothing line for $3.99. Get at me. And I just do that on some of the biggest brands, streetwear brands. Like at the time, it was maybe a Pink Dolphin or Crooks and Castles or whoever the brand may be. It could be Supreme or whatever. Whoever got a lot of followers and a lot of eyeballs on it, I would go in there and just do that. That was the only way to get out there. But once IG allowed for you to pay them and they would do that for you, I was like, oh, man, this is like cheating. And so I come from not being able to do it. And I know the value of letting them do it. And I know it's some people that just like, oh, why would I pay them? Blah, blah, blah. I'm supposed to be free. But they're billionaires for a reason, you know? And they're not gonna let you play on their platform for free. You know, you're not gonna really see the benefits. I know for us, I'm not just saying what I think. I know that it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but the main thing is to really have content that resonate with people and your demographic. You got to know your demographic and concentrate on them and make stuff that's going to resonate to them. Like with us, if you're not into fashion, if you're not into streetwear, if you're not into urban or street culture, things like that, you may not find our page appealing. You know what I mean? And we're good with that. But if you are and you stumble across it, boom, you just hit it. And I think one of the keys is make sure your page have similar content. So if I caught you with this type of content, when you click, oh, view profile, click, and you see a whole bunch more, then you're going to definitely say, you know what, I'm going to follow. Now, there's been some times where I've seen somebody's page and they had something I liked and I went to it and I didn't see any more of that type of content. I'm like, what? I don't want to see you eating food and whatever you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And so I believe it's very important to have a lot of that same content. You know what I mean? Because if you caught them with this bait, then you got to have more of that bait to keep them. And your don't niche. Worry about, you got to have your niche and just concentrate on your niche. And to be honest, when I first started selling t-shirts, the name of my company was called Big Pimpin' Turf Clothes. And so with that name, I knew that I had a specific niche, that I wasn't finna be in one of the big chain stores or things like that. I wasn't finna appeal to a lot of the population out there. I knew that. But I knew that whoever was feeling what I had, they was gonna feel it tremendously. And that's how it worked. It worked that way. It was not broad. It's specific, like a bullseye. You know what I mean? I'm hitting with a bullseye. I know I'm gonna hear a whole bunch of no's. Whole bunch of whatevers. It's not for everybody. That's why I tell myself, this right here, it's not for everybody. It's only for a select few. And it's up to me to go find my tribe of people who's willing to purchase it. And that's what I did, you know? And that's what I did. And that's the same thing I do now. Like, you know what? We're not trying to be for everybody. So we can't try to be. We got to be for where we're good at. We got to be for us. You know what I mean? We're basically putting up a mirror and making it for others such as ourselves. You're going to be authentic that way. You're going to be, nobody can beat you at being you. So it's a no-brainer. And so sometimes our stuff may seem a little whatever.
Sure.
But it's us.
But you crafted the niche. It's interesting, right? Because later it's easier to dive deeper into the niche when you've got the traction, right? But it's hard at the beginning, right, to get the traction as well, because you're just trying to take anybody that you can help. But that's huge. I mean, it's crazy. Like Ferrick said, the last podcast we did with Warrior Printing out of Hawaii is the exact same thing. So that's big. I want to ask you a question, actually. So, you know, I'm a black business owner. You're a black business owner. Let's talk about diversity in the industry just and jump into it. Because I think with everything race relation wise, equality, inequality, all of it that's been happening this year, it's been a big thing. I know some brands are definitely starting to talk about it more. I know Rock actually had a pretty big couple podcasts about it and like how they can help. And I know shops have been pushing hard into it too. What do you think about this space? And it could just be more business ownership. It doesn't necessarily have to be our industry. Obviously, you know, black unemployment's way higher than other races' unemployment when things like COVID hit or any type of recessions hit. Like, what are your thoughts on it? And how can we help, right? Because we all have big voices. You have big followings. We try to put out a lot of content. We, you know, we're there. We're present.
What is the issue, this problem, this plague, so to speak? You know, it's been around since the inception of this country, you know, since we've been brought to these shores. It's what this was really built, this country. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Our industry is mainly white boys, right? And black entrepreneurs, black garment decorators, black fashion designers, we out here heavy. I didn't know how much it was until we did Magic. And you know, Magic in Vegas is a national trade show, and our booth was filled up with so many people, man. It was ridiculous. And our competitor, not our competitors, but everybody else around us, they was looking at our booth like, what is it? What is it about it? And like you can see, our IG is 152,000 followers. You know what I'm saying? And so we're in this space. When it comes to fashion, black people, we're into it. That's one of the main businesses that we go into as a people is fashion, whether it's designing or whatever, we go into it heavy. We just not heavily representing it on, say, for instance, with all the lights being shined on our industry. When you go to the ISS show and you see the big panels up there, they never hearing it from our perspective. You feel me? It's never that. You know what I mean? I've been going there for years. You know what I'm saying? And I go every year. Like other businesses in general, for some of them, I believe it's maybe authentic, and some of them it's just the time that we're in. You know what I mean? Because it's heavy on your timeline. It's heavy in the on the news, and you can't really turn it off. And it's a big problem, but it's been a big problem. You know what I mean? And I think, like, for us, that's why I think we're doing so good, is that black people, we know that we got to do something for ourselves. So entrepreneurship is the way that you don't have to really rely on someone else giving you an opportunity. You can make one for yourself. You know what I mean? So entrepreneurship is kind of like the great equalizer, even though we still have the challenges of not having access to capital, not being taken care, not being taken serious. You know what I mean? Not having the best educational system set up to where, you know, you can really be educated on business, because business is a tricky thing. And having access to capital is one of the biggest setbacks or hurdles that we have to overcome. You know what I mean? Whereas me as a business owner, to this day, right, to this day, I haven't had any loans or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like all our equipment that we got, we purchased. That's why I always got to find a good deal. You know what I mean? Even if financially I may be doing cool, and you can see that for whatever reason, when I go talk to whoever it is, Geneva Capital, Beacon Funding, Centrium, and the numbers that these people come back with is so ridiculous. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know what it is. I can't say it's my race. I can't say it because that's not what it is. But when I look around in the industry, I'm like, how are these guys having all this brand new equipment? How are they getting all of this stuff? How is when you go to ISS, I see all this new stuff and these guys actually have it. And I'm trying to get them, like, man, it just, I don't know, it didn't add up. But once we got this one big order that we just recently did, I can see how they were able to buy it. You know what I mean? Like, you get a contract when it comes to economic inclusion, when you get the PO, say, from a big Fortune 500 company, and they're giving you 300,000 shirts, 400,000 shirts to produce. Now I can see how you can afford it. Now I can see how every year they're buying, you can actually afford a digital squeegee. I can see how you can do that, right? I can see how you can have two of them. I can see how you got strikers. You know what I mean? I can see it. I'm like, whoa. I see this PO. I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of money. And I'm to think that this is just one order. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's guys out there who have multiple of those type of scenarios. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's why, like, when we got this big order, I put it out there like, man, it's the power of the purchase order. The power of the purchase order can really change. It can really affect change. You know what I mean? It can really affect change on a massive level, because once, like, some companies do what is called, like, donations. They may do a donation. Oh, yeah, we're donating X amount of dollars to this organization, or we may be donating X amount of dollars to that organization. It's a whole nother thing when you actually send a purchase order to a black business. And now you really infuse that business with resources. Now they got to produce something, and at the end of that, you're going to get some resources. And so it's a great scenario if it happens. I know for us, we had a chance to experience, so I want to document the change and what we was able to do within that short period of time. Like, we doubled in size. We then bought a whole bunch of equipment. Yeah, we able to really, really expand and grow.
And keep hiring people from there.
Yeah, and we hire people.
Creating jobs.
Creating jobs. We hired a lot of people. And during a pandemic is when we hired them.
I can't obviously have an effect on a bank, right? But the educational side, you talk about the educational gap, right? Of teaching those things to help say, hey, you know, capital may be harder, but here's how you can be able to get there. Here's the kind of steps. Here's what you can see to be able to look around the corner. What are things that we can do and our industry could do and people listening can do to be able to help reduce that inequality gap?
Well, in our industry, well, in all industries really, right? Just look, it's very simple. Just go and say, you know what? How many black-owned businesses do we actually do business with?
As vendors or? Sure.
As vendors, as entrepreneurs. But what we can do as all business owners is be conscious. Because I think one of the main problems is that majority of the population out there that's in charge, they're not conscious of the fact that they're not doing business with black-owned business. They're not conscious of it. And so what I believe right now in this time is that is putting it on people's consciousness. You know what I'm saying? And people are really conscious on what the scenario is, you know? And so we as business owners, I think that's one of the things. And then also, not just from an economic standpoint, but from a social standpoint and a humanitarian standpoint, is when you see injustice go on, you can't really just turn your eye to it. You know what I mean? Can't turn your head to it. It's not affecting me, so therefore I don't really care. You know what I mean? Because like I said, this problem has been going on in this country since the inception of this country. It's one of the reasons why this country is so-called where it's at. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We have free labor. I mean, just imagine if you had people working in your shop for free for centuries, and you know, you would definitely have an advantage over the rest of the world. You know what I mean? You got people working for you for free. And then once they're so-called free, they don't have rights. And you can't go into this part of town. You can't go to that school. It's a lot of stuff that's systematically in place to hold us back or to keep us separate.
You said two things that I just want to emphasize again. I think the conscious aspect is something that we don't always, like, we're not always conscious of. Maybe we should spend extra time diversifying our team. Maybe we should spend extra time diversifying the vendors, especially like that. Because you're right, the power of the PO.
You know, like I look at my business, and when things started hitting, then we started talking about it. And the meeting that we kind of brought our team together and we were talking about it. And the one thing someone said, they're like, we can't just talk about this for a month because it's popular and then it goes away. You know, we need to figure out a way to continue talking about it. And I took it personally because it's like, okay, this is my business. But I think sometimes in bigger companies and organizations, they have people dedicated to thinking about those things, right?
Right.
And in a small business, we don't have someone dedicated to thinking about diversity, inclusion, the power of the purchase order, making sure that, you know, that we are being conscious of that. And so part of it falls on the business owner. And it's something that we have to consciously be doing, whether or not it's in our job description. Us as employers, we are the HR department, right? We are the power of the purse. We decide just about everything. And I think our employees look up to us and say, well, you know, Starbucks is doing these initiatives. Why isn't Campus Inc? You know, and it shouldn't be how big your company is or need an HR department to do it. And that was the lesson that I kind of took away, is the small things can actually matter, and talking about it and being conscious of it. Because it's, you know, when your employees, they'll ask us, or a customer will say, you know, a customer asked me, like, will you do a BLM fundraiser? And I said, I will do it, but I think we should probably find like a black-owned business to print it, because like you said, grassroots all the way down, and all the way down the line, I think as a printing industry, we have a lot of creatives. I think it's up to us to be able to express that down to the printing presses and the pullers and the folders to our customers, because we do touch a significant amount of people every single day with our apparel.
Right. And in business in general. And that would be dope, like to do it, like to do a BLM shirt or Inspire shirt is dope, right? But it really means something when you make it a point that this has to be done by a black printer or something of that sort. Like we just did one and that job, they mandated that it had to be done by a black printer. And that's what I thought was so dope, because it was like, you know what? It has to be done by a black printer, period. And so it turned at least our industry into a whirlwind. Whoever the person was in charge, they're like, what, a black printer? Where we get those at? And that was the funny thing, is like they started maybe on one side of the country and had to network with somebody in Boston and somebody in Florida to find us here in California. You know what I mean? And so that's how undiverse their situation was before the big corporation said it has to be a black printer. So it actually mandated that they have a black printer in their midst now. You know what I mean? And so that was pretty dope. You know what I mean? And that's why I wanted to highlight it, just to show the effects that it has. It's like immediate. It's not like we have to have these big meetings. No, they need X amount of whatever. We're going to supply that and boom. And now we can do X, Y, and Z. Now, if they said, well, you know what, we're going to do this ongoing, not just because it's a BLM. That's when the real change is taking place. If a big Fortune 500 company decides that whoever they decide they're going to partner up with, that's what they do. They partner up with them. So if you are in their supply chain, you're basically a partner in their business. And so say, for instance, you're hooking up with a company that sells widgets and they plug you in and say, you know what? Okay, I see you're doing your little widget thing over here. We're going to plug you in. You went from doing $5,000 a month. Now, can you handle $50,000? If you can handle it, now you can grow, and you can grow with us. You know what I mean? And they can handle it. They just haven't had the opportunity to be able to handle it. You know what I mean? And like in our case, when it popped up, like, oh, yeah, that's a lot of shirts. Okay, cool. Yeah, we can handle it. Let me show you how well we can do it. You know what I mean? And just being presented that opportunity, it was great. You know what I mean? It was great.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, it to me, it always comes back to huge amounts of empathy around it, like of especially in a year like this one where we just have definitely become more divided in a lot of different areas, whether whatever you believe. It's like how do we, even going into like you know, a family event, right? You know, if people sit on the opposite sides, it's like, oh boy, you know. But having like, why do you believe that? What where do you think you're coming from on that? Like, what's your point of view? And just for us to all be able to truly have that patience instead of such a snap decision or thought.
Nowadays, everybody's thoughts and opinions can be seen, right? You can read it without even asking, right? Like before social media, before Facebook, you didn't really know what some of your family members thought, right? You didn't know their viewpoints, you know what I mean? Until you start seeing the thing that they like and they share. You feel me? And so then you have this big, great divide between family members. It's really between the whole country. It's always been like that, but now everything is just out there full front, full force. So if you believe X, Y, and Z and the other person don't, now you have a platform to show what you think. And before, you have to actually have a conversation with somebody, you know what I mean, to know how they thought. Now you can just scroll on their page and you can see how they feel and what they think. And they may not be in the line with your thinking. And so therefore that's the division. And it's easy to divide people right now because people have a platform to get out their viewpoint without having the gatekeepers having to, you know, show it. So I just think that right now it's a very, very critical time in this country. You know what I mean? Because we got election coming up and the country is just so divided. It's crazy. You know what I mean? It is so divided and it's always been, but now it's blatant and it's on TV and it's on your timeline. You can really, really see it at all times. And you have presidential candidates that are really like, I've never seen it before. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And people are so like devoted to whatever side it is. If you're on this side or if you're that side, they're It's no coming together. It's a wrap on coming together. So I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know. I'm just sitting back watching and really just trying to just, you know, take every day at a time and, you know, make sure that we're good. And if not, then, you know, we're just going to play it out how it goes. Because, you know, I'm saying it from a Black perspective. I don't know how it's going to play out. You know what I mean? I don't know what's going to happen. We done seen a lot of stuff go on in this country that you would think wouldn't, but it does. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm a Black man, so I see the world a little bit different. You know, the society, I guess I had the benefit of seeing society on how it really is. You know what I mean? And it's really crazy, but, you know, we used to it. So it
is. Yeah. I had an eye-opening experience. So my business partner's dad is 90, paper press printing, was big in paper, and he doesn't use Facebook or even have a phone. He comes into our shop and he restores like doorknobs in the back. And anyways, he goes, what's going on in the world right now? And I'm like, it's a sad world, Bob. And he goes, let me show you something. He goes, back in 1970, you know, my neighbor couldn't get a baseball diamond rented out. And he started pulling out art from the 70s that he did. I have it right here. It's unbelievable. And I thought, we're talking Central Illinois, like this 90-year-old white guy is going to, I'm like, great, what are you going to talk to me about? And he basically was like, you have the power to be able to, you know, help and empower other people to do it. And I was just like, it kind of shook me because I'm like, I would never have imagined this 90-year-old guy showing me his, like, he literally pulled it out of his filing cabinets. And he's like, it's here, I was rustling, but this is old. This is from, like, 1970. It's old film.
Ah.
Right? And he's like, my neighbor was the baseball coach, and he couldn't rent out a diamond because he was Black, so I printed a bunch of stuff for him. Literally, it was, and I would have never thought this. This is Jed's dad, Bruce. And he gave me his entire filing cabinet of it. You know, he's like, people are going to come to you, and you have to be able to listen to them and help them where they don't realize it. I mean, it's all letterpress. Check this out. This is really cool. I don't know if you can see it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I hand cut all this stuff, my, like, AB Dick 400 printing presses. And I was kind of taken back, but at the same time, I was like, he hasn't seen the corruptness of social media. But it's like, people are here to work together, you know, in our printing industry of creatives. Like, if this 90-year-old guy was coming in and telling me this, like, I should, you know, I almost, like, felt guilty. And I was like, wow, you're going to pull this out of your old archives just to show me what that is in relevant times. It literally, I've kept it on my desk. I really haven't shown it to too many people, and I was just like, wow, because it's something we have to do, you know,
right.
And it's up to us.
Right. Bruce, and that's the thing is like, it's a situation that's been going on for centuries, forever. Since I've been a kid, my grandmother was a kid, her grandmother was a kid. You know what I mean? It's what built this country, is what this country is based on. And so, yeah, it'd probably be the thing that destroys this company, this country. That's the same thing that built it. You know what I mean? Either it'll bring it together, but it has centuries to do that. And so therefore, I don't see it. You know what I mean? I don't see it like bringing it together. It's the biggest divider that this country's ever had, Black and white. The biggest divider, you know what I mean? And in some cases, people come together. But as a country, as a whole, man, it was legal to own people. You know what I mean? That was law. Not for 5 minutes, not for 10 minutes, for centuries. You know what I mean? And so it's a cold, cold scenario.
Yeah. And Dawood, we appreciate you like being, I mean, a you know, like just kind of leading the industry for it. I know listeners probably listening to this are just like, they could probably listen to this for a while because you're on the ground floor, you're employing people, you're dealing it with from all sides. And we appreciate what you're doing and continuing to like educate us because I need it every single day. I need it more and more and more and more. And so that's awesome.
Sure. I know I'm not the end all be all when it comes to the subject. You know what I mean? It's a very, very complex subject. It's a very, very, it's very, very, it runs deep. You know what I mean? It really runs deep. So a lot of people have different perspectives. That's just mine. You know what I mean? And yeah, we could talk about it forever and ever. But, you know, in our industry, it's hardly ever talked about just because, you know, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Far as when I say in our industry, I mean like the ones who have the eyeballs. You know what I mean? The ones who have the platforms that are shown, the ones who get showcased, is not really talked about as much. You know what I mean? But far as from our perspective, we talk about it all the time. You know what I mean? When we chop it up in here, that's what it's always been, whether it's doing business, whether it's at home, at Thanksgiving, where it's at the barbershop, whether it's on the phone, it's every day. This is a conversation for us, you know what I mean? Because we really live through it, like really live through it every day. You know what I mean? Like I just got, I don't know, it's like about 15 dudes outside right now. All of them young black dudes, you know what I mean? They from the streets and we all go through it. It's part of growing up. Like the way I grew up, what they used to tell us when I was say like about 13, it's like, you know what? You'd be lucky to make it to 25. You know what I mean? That was the environment that we lived in. And that wasn't from racism. That was just the environment that we lived in. Like, man, if you make it to 25, man, you're doing good. And to be told that as a youngster, you know what I mean? That's kind of hard. So when you get to 25, you feel like you old because you wasn't supposed to make it this long. And when you look around, a lot of your friends actually didn't. You know, it's like oh, you just saying that. But then as you get older, you're like making it to 19, you start seeing how difficult it could be. You know what I mean? Because the way in certain areas where you grow up at, it's like really active and, you know, it's a lot of stuff going on. And so you can actually not make it to 19, 20, 21, start going to so many funerals and things like that. And so, man, this country is cool, but then at the same time, just as cool as it is, it's bad. On the opposite coin, it's bad. It's the same. So, you know, we try to make the most out of it because that's all we can do. We got to take these lemons and make lemonade out of it. And that's why I picked up the t-shirts to try to, you know what? I don't want to be a victim to what they're saying. So at 19, I saw t-shirts and I started selling t-shirts on the same streets where these guys are selling whatever they're selling. And this guy's doing whatever he's doing. I'm right here in the middle with t-shirts and I'm making t-shirts to represent us and them. And I'll make t-shirts to represent our neighborhood. And I just saw how much love I got by selling t-shirts. It was so dope. And at the time when I was doing, it was maybe like three other dudes making brands. And now to be here 2020 and have dudes flying from all over the country to come and place an order with us is so humbling. It's a great experience, man. It's crazy. It's a great gateway for entrepreneurship for our people. You know what I mean? Because you don't need a college degree. You don't need all these different variables and parameters to actually get into the game. Or you needed some creativity and some hustle. Then, man, the sky's the limit. You know, sky's the limit. You creative and you can hustle. Hell, even if you're not creative, if you can hustle, you can go, you can really make you a name with selling garments. Everybody sell clothes. You can't come outside without them. So you just got to put something on it to make somebody want to wear it. And, you know, that's been our thing from day one.
Dawood, yeah, thanks for so much for being able to share your story and perspective. I mean, you just have an incredible niche and it's really, really cool to be able to see where you want to dive into. Everybody, this is Dawood Muhammad out of Big Printing from San Leandro, California. If you guys don't follow him, check him out.
It's really Oakland.
It's really Oakland, California. If you guys don't follow him, check him out on Big Printing on Instagram. You can definitely check it out. We'll see you guys on the next episode of Printavo Print Hustlers Podcast.
All right, now appreciate it.